You're tuned to Perspectives, a weekly public affairs show which airs every Saturday right here on KTEP. And joining us today is Peter Brown Hoffmeister. Peter is the author of a recent novel called Graphic, The Valley, and it was just released actually this month. And it kind of raises the question of how far we should go in preserving the splendor of our wild and beautiful parks and natural resources. And Peter is an avid climber and outdoorsman, and he's written various books. Peter, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us here today.
Oh, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
First of all, tell us a little bit about your background and how did you get interested in the outdoors and climbing and preserving and all that stuff?
Well, I had a little bit of an outdoor childhood. We lived in Tucson in the year that I was 6 and then 7 and then 8. We lived outside of Tucson, and we started out on 7 acres of land, and we were homeschooled. My three siblings at the time and I were homeschooled, and we'd just run around the desert most of the day, and we'd catch lizards and snakes and tarantulas, and we had a desert tortoise named Barstow that was our pet. And we'd feed it lettuce, and it would come in and drink water and eat lettuce and then go back out. And we had an incredible early childhood kind of period outside. And then I went to an outdoor school for a while called the Kino Learning Center in the Santa Catalina Mountains in Tucson. And then another year, we lived up by the canyons, up by Pima Canyon. And so we'd just hike into the canyons to the springs, and we'd read and write and study whatever my mom wanted us to study that day, and then just swim in the Creek Canyon. So it was kind of a beautiful childhood. And then later on, we lived in Switzerland and roamed around in Seattle, and we just ride our bikes around and everything. So I kind of always loved the outdoors and loved camping and fishing and all those kinds of things. And then when my eighth grade year, I decided to sleep outside 100 nights in a row, and so that kind of really cemented it for me. But now I run an integrated outdoor program that combines desert, snow, and river literature with outdoor pursuits like navigation, spelunking in caves, rock climbing, river swimming, snowshoeing, basic survival, and I do that kind of stuff with my two girls, too. So that was kind of the background for Let Them Be Eaten by Bears, The Fearless Guide to Taking Our Kids into the Great Outdoors, and then that book came right before this book, and then for my first novel with Graphic the Valley, I wanted to place it somewhere like Yosemite Valley, somewhere epic and gorgeous, so I could have that outdoor location in there.
It's interesting that you mentioned the book Let Them Be Eaten by Bears, and you have two daughters, because I can't remember the name of the author right now, but it's sort of a spiritual book about raising your boys. I think it's called Wild at Heart, and that boys are naturally just born to be wild, no pun intended.
Yeah.
But the fact, you know, you don't want them to play with guns, they'll pick up a stick and it turned into a gun. And the fact that you're supposed to call them, give them names like Tiger and a way to go sport, where his mom will say, oh, sweetheart, you're going to hurt yourself. And so here you are with two young ladies and you're taking them out and showing them all the stuff that is kind of, I don't want to say taboo, but usually it's the stereotype is that boys will be boys, go out and let them be boys, and young ladies are going to be having tea parties with their dolls and stuff like that.
Yeah, and I think boys are rough and tumble, and that Wild at Heart, that's a great book. That's my best friend's favorite book. He's read it 3 or 4 times, and he always reminds me of sections that I haven't read because I've only read it once, but yeah, I mean, that's a great book. I think boys do want to be wild, and I think they do want to make spears and bow and arrows, and they make things into guns, and they play attack games, and they wrestle and all that. But I found that girls love the outdoors in the same way. I mean, they sometimes are not as physical with each other. I know that I camp a lot with my two nephews, and I camp a lot with my daughters, and my nephews are always wrestling and punching each other, and they love each other. They're just really physical, and maybe my girls don't punch each other, but they love to be outside. And you know, my daughter, my older daughter, my 12-year-old daughter, she just had a learning experience because we were camping the other day in the desert, and they said they were going rabbit hunting, and I said, okay, but if you kill a rabbit, we're going to eat it. And then they came back and they said they didn't get a rabbit, and then they said they were going squirrel hunting, and I said, okay, but if you kill a squirrel, we're going to eat it. And they ended up killing neither. They killed a chipmunk, but we ate it. And it was a learning experience for them because they really hadn't considered, you know, what it takes to skin and eat a chipmunk before they killed it. So I think girls are wild at heart too, and I think they love the outdoors, and they, you know, they love camping under the stars and swimming in creeks and all that kind of stuff.
It's interesting, and I'm glad that you mentioned also that you were homeschooled, because for a long time, homeschool students or homeschooling was looked down upon. And one of the main concerns that people always said is that the children would grow up without any socialization skills. Our children were homeschooled, and I think they did fine. So tell us a little bit about your experience as a homeschooled child.
Well, I mean, mine was a little maybe less conventional. I know they have really, really good socialization groups, and like one day a week, some homeschool groups in my area of Oregon meet together. It's ironic that my daughters go to a bilingual public school because I wanted them to learn Spanish, and I teach at a public school now since I was homeschooled. But I love homeschooling, too. We did the Calvert Books program, so my mom ordered books from Baltimore, and they included things like spelling and math and literature and history and Latin and all that kind of core stuff, science books that were great based on the year in school. Really kind of exploratory curriculum, which was great. So I think homeschool can be absolutely wonderful, and I had siblings, and I played on sports teams, so it wasn't like I was totally isolated from kids my age or anything like that, and I loved hanging out with my brothers and sisters and just running around on biking around and all that. So I think maybe homeschooling is a little bit maligned these days, and people think that you have to be, you know, whatever, some kind of extremist to homeschool. But I think there are wonderful education ideas in homeschooling and public school and private school. I think it's more about the kid and the teacher
and learning, right?
Yeah, it's really about being, you know, creative and inquisitive and adaptive. And I think as long as that's happening in whatever school environment, then it's going to be a good school experience and people are going to learn.
Like the lesson you taught your girls about eating whatever they shop.
That was important to me, because then they feel like they have a relationship to their food and there are consequences for actions, and they can be good or bad consequences depending on whether or not you like chipmunk meat. But we fried it in butter and Johnny salt, so it wasn't too bad.
Tastes like chicken, right?
Exactly like chicken. but, yeah, I think there are key lessons that kids need to learn no matter what their schooling situation is.
Now, you mentioned you were hooked on the outdoors after spending 100 nights in a row outside. What's so special about the number 100, and why did you try and do that?
I was kind of an obsessive kid, or a very obsessive kid, and I liked to count, so I liked to think of big numbers. You know, if I was going to do sit-ups, I wanted to do 100 or something like that. And so I thought, well, it was the end of my eighth grade year. I was homeschooled then, but I just decided I'm going to start sleeping on the backyard right before I went on a long two-week camping trip in Central Oregon. And so I started adding up the nights, and then I thought, well, it'd be cool to do 100. And it ended up being 102. But I wanted to be outside every single night, meaning I would get rained on sometimes. I never used a tent that summer. And so it only rained a few times, but I got rained on and saw thunderstorms and had one night where a cougar walked in on us and sniffed us and walked away. And I mean, there were just so many beautiful, amazing experiences in that streak of sleeping out that I think it just made me love the outdoors so much more. And so when I wrote Graphic the Valley, this first novel, that's what I was hoping for, is I was hoping to evoke, in some sense, that wonder of the natural world. And Yosemite was such an easy place to write because it was like, well, this is Yosemite. There are waterfalls, and there's the Merced River, and there are all these epic granite faces, and the trees are beautiful, and there are bears and foxes and cougars, and it's amazing in there. Have you been to Yosemite?
No, I haven't.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
As far as the novel goes, it's based basically on a young Native American child who was born out at Yosemite, correct? In a car, is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay, and then I don't want to give the whole novel away, but the fact that, you know, he grows up there in that area and with his parents living on a diet of, you know, you mentioned your daughter's eating chipmunk, but he ate fish, acorns, and a lot of stuff that was out there that people, you know, basically living off the land. So tell us about this book, and why did you pick a Native American child? Not that it matters, because we tend to stereotype Native American people as living off the land, and of course they did teach. If it hadn't been for Native Americans, a lot of would-be farmers here who settled out in the West wouldn't have done very well without their help. Mm-hmm. But tell us about this young man's adventures. Tenaya, is that his name?
Yeah,
Tenaya. Tenaya, okay.
Well, I started thinking I wanted to do a modern retelling of Samson and Delilah.
Okay.
So I wanted to write a book, but I then was thinking I wanted a young homeless protagonist. So it's kind of a coming-of-age novel, a love story with the lust and violence that goes along with the Samson story, but set in the Yosemite Valley. And then I was, I've been camping off and on for about 10 years in Yosemite Valley. And I thought, I came across this sign that was really strange. It had the tribe names wrong for the Yosemite Valley. It was stating that there were Miwoks as original inhabitants instead of the Northern Paiutes, the Yosemite, which the valley's named after. But the Park Service had put the wrong names down on all these signs and all these pictures, and I started researching it, and I found out that the Northern Paiutes are really angry about this. And so I thought it would be interesting if I put in some history, some Native American history in here, and then I realized that the protagonist was going to have to be Native American, and I'm not Native American. My wife and daughters are Cherokee, but I'm not. And so that felt like a little bit of a strange acquisition, but then I realized, well, we acquire any time we create a novel's character, and it only made sense to have him be a Yosemite if I was going to have the allusion to the original inhabitants and all that. So I made Tenaya an allusion to the original Tenaya, Chief Tenaya of the Yosemite Valley. And then kind of I realized that I had that natural juxtaposition of the character and him living there forever and being born in a car, never having left the valley and subsisting somewhat. But he's also subsisting off of the leftover tourist food. That's something that some climbers and I have done in Yosemite Valley, is that we'll go through curry and we'll eat tourist leftovers for days so that we don't buy any food. And it just makes our trips really cheap. And so we've scrounged dumpsters, and we've scrounged Curry Village and Yosemite Lodge, and I've gone through bear boxes and scored leftover food. And so I wanted him to be gaining that food while also fishing the rivers, eating the acorn bread. So there's kind of that mix of traditionalism and being part of this overly developed national park where there are 4 million visitors a year.
When you talk about national parks and going outside, and it seems like social media has taken away a lot of that, because some of today's young people and even adults, there are some who have never ever been camping in their life or experienced the outdoors. Some of them because they can't. I mean, they grew up in these concrete jungles and they never left, but when they go out there and they experience these beautiful pine trees, mountains, lakes, and they see this and they go, wow, this is incredible.
Yeah. And that's such an amazing moment. That's probably my favorite thing about running an outdoor program for high school kids, is that every year, we have 70 kids in our program every year, a new 70 kids each year, and we've been doing it about a decade now. But this will be year 10 coming up. But every year we have 1 to 2 dozen kids who've never done anything outside, never gone camping, never been away from their homes, and sometimes never left their hometown. And so we get them out and do desert survival, or we get them snow camping and they're building snow survival shelters, or climbing a mountain in the winter, or they're rafting a river or kayaking a river. And it's amazing to see those kids each year who are doing this for the first time, who've never been outside, whose ideas of the outdoors is that they're going to get eaten, or they're going to get a broken leg, or they're going to get killed by rockfall or something like that, because they kind of have these terrified ideas of the outdoors. And then they get out there and it's just beautiful and peaceful and a real experience that they haven't had, and they haven't gotten away from their phones or computers or televisions before. And that's probably the most rewarding thing for me when I work with the outdoor program.
And tell us a little bit about, you know, for people who have never been out there, and of course, you've slept 100 nights in a row, as you mentioned. But when you get out there and you look at the sky, it's incredible. I mean, you see stars and constellations that you weren't even aware were out there because you're away from the city. So when you go with some of these city youngsters out there and they see this, tell us a little bit about some of the reactions and perhaps some of the stories or unusual things that have happened.
Yeah, I mean, with the stars, we take our kids to the Willamette River in kind of the Central Valley in Western Oregon every year, but then also in the spring, just a few weeks ago, late spring, we always take a huge group of kids, about 60, over to the Deschutes River in the Central Oregon Desert, and we raft and camp through these river canyons, and so the canyon walls kind of close in, and so there are those stars that you're talking about where you see constellations you didn't even know existed, where instead of seeing a few hundred stars like in the city, you just see thousands and thousands of stars, and it feels like they're multiplying as you're watching them and shooting stars and all that kind of stuff. But then you were asking about a story. I was thinking about a snow survival trip we did just last winter. We were in the Cascade Mountain Range in the North Sierras, and there was a girl on our trip who had never been camping before, and this was her first camping trip, was a snow survival trip, so she was backpacking on snowshoes, had to build snow caves to sleep in. I mean, it was really a trial by fire, or more like a trial by ice, and she got up the second morning, and we decided to go summit this mountain in the backcountry, and you had to hike a few miles on snowshoes just to get to the base of the mountain and then climb it. She was terrified of heights. She'd never been on snowshoes. Everything was overwhelming for her, but I assigned one of my outward bound volunteers to step over next to her and just climb the last half mile with her, and he's great with her, and they just climbed together, and they did a few feet at a time and a few feet at a time and a few feet at a time, and we had a turnaround time, and she came in just 4 minutes before the turnaround time, and she was sobbing because she was on the summit of a mountain in winter for the first time, and there were just enormous mountains all around her up and down the range, and it was one of those cool moments where I thought, man, I can't believe that I do this as a job, you know, because it's so rewarding, and this is all of the stuff that I do for fun, so it was great.
And the other books that you've written are kind of like guides and other things like that, but this is your first novel, and as I mentioned, Graphic the Valley. Why did you decide to write a novel?
Well, actually, my first book, going back, I wrote a memoir that included Texas. I made a lot of bad decisions in my teenagehood. I went to public school, so maybe I should have stayed homeschool. But I went to public school starting in ninth grade, and I started getting in trouble, and I made a lot of bad decisions and had trouble with my parents and ended up getting expelled from a school, then expelled from another, then expelled from another, then arrested and sent to rehab in East Texas in the Life Challenge program. And then I left that program and slept in the Greyhound bus station in the day and then walked the streets at night. So I was homeless for a while in Dallas. And then I traveled west on the I-10 later. But my first book, The End of Boys, is about that kind of whole experience and how I was able to become a man later on through the intervention of some really amazing adults in my life. But then my second book was a guide, and from there, I really have always wanted to write novels. I love novels. My mom read novels to me when I was little, and she did all the voices, and I just always wanted to be a writer. And so as I was writing more and more and more short stories, I just started thinking, well, how could I put together something longer? And I was pretty bad at writing long stories. And then this story just sort of happened where I was rewriting Samson in the Yosemite Valley and then became longer and longer, and then I wrote a few drafts, and then my literary agent said that it had potential, and I kept working on it for a couple years, and then in the end, multiple editors were interested, and I went with a small publisher who I really felt like believed in the book and knew what was important with the book, and that's kind of how we ended up where we are.
Peter, one of the things that you mentioned is that your mother used to read to you and, mm-hmm. and with the voices and stuff. And one of the good things, I think, about social media and technology is the fact that now we've had them before, but people are using them now more, audiobooks. Mm-hmm. And like the radio dramas of the 1950s and 40s, if someone, you have a good narrator and you have someone who does the voices and has the sound effect, it can captivate someone who would never pick up a book and never touch it. So are there any plans that you have perhaps for someday doing an audiobook?
Well, I did an audio short story of one of my stories called The Great American Afterlife. It had been a finalist for this big award, and a band came to me and said, hey, we'd like to record music behind you reading this. And so I read that short story, and that was really fun, but I'm not sure I'm the best reader there is out there. I know that Graphic the Valley just released this month, but then last week they released the audiobook from Audible, and we were a little nervous, the publisher and I, when we got the recording, because we didn't know if the two voices, the father and the son in the book, were going to be, you know, what we'd imagined for an audiobook. But Audible is a great company.
And, it is.
And they have two really good professional actors who read, and they do a great job. So that was fun to hear that the audiobook actually worked out, and that it's not going to be some version of Graphic the Valley where I'm thinking, oh, I wish people didn't have to listen to that, you know? But they did their job really well, really professionally.
So Graphic the Valley is available on Audible already?
Mm-hmm. It is, yeah. So if you go to the Amazon site and go to Graphic the Valley, then you can see the audiobooks already up.
And is it abridged or unabridged?
Unabridged. I think it's 9 hours and 23 minutes.
Wow. Okay, you've gotten me. You've already got my, gosh, I forgot what I was going to say. I'm probably going to go download it right after this because I love audiobooks. And,
oh, do you?
Yes.
Oh, I would love it if you heard it.
That's my dream one day to be able to voice something for one of these companies. But
well, you have a good voice. Actually, as soon as I heard your voice, you sound a little bit like I imagine the father sounding.
Well, thank you. Well, when you do something graphic in the other valley, I'll be available.
Okay.
Tell us a little bit more about the lesson you want to teach in this book, as far as, you know, for people who say, well, you know, I'm not interested in reading about somebody who goes out, who survives. There's been too many stories like that. And really, there haven't. John Krakauser has written stories, but those are about, like, you know, into thin air and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But these survival stories, they keep you on the edge, especially, as you mentioned, they have good sound, good readers, and of course, obviously, the writing is very good. Because as I read this book, you know, I got hooked, like most people will, I'm sure.
Oh, thank you. Well, I think that this isn't. I mean, there is definitely a survival element here. And
is it autobiographical? Maybe
it's not. I mean, I have a lot of experience in Yosemite, but it's really based on the main character is based on Samson, and so. Although it has survival elements, it, you know, it has the three parts of his life. It has his first failed relationship, and it has him living in the caves and kind of fighting against everything that's around him, and then his third part, which is his relationship with Delilah. So, I mean, I'd say at its basic core, it's a relationship book. It's about young men and young women and what we're going to do with our lives going forward. But there definitely is a survival and nature element, and that's part and parcel with writing something in Yosemite Valley and having somebody who's not wealthy, who's living in that location, because it's not like he could go to a restaurant and eat well every day. But hopefully the readers will get hooked, and hopefully, you know, at the core, it's going to just be a good story about people, real people, who matter to the readers. But, you know, some things I write people love, and some things I write people don't love, and I've also gotten fan and hate mail on the same thing, so you never know what's going to happen as far as an audience's reaction is going to be.
Now, I know you have a website, and on your website, can people read excerpts from some of your books, and perhaps even, well, I know they can listen to graphic of the valley as an excerpt on audible.com. Mm-hmm. But on this, on your website, for example, it talks about when you wrote the Loss, mm-hmm. Your fiction collection, mm-hmm. and also How to Break Up with Your Climbing Partner, which sounds a very interesting title.
Yeah, I wrote that for Rock and Ice magazine. And as far as rock climb goes, El Paso, there's amazing rock climbing around there with Waco Tanks.
Oh, yes.
But yeah, my website is www.peterbrownhoffmeister.com. So it's just my name. You can Google search under my name, too, or Graphic the Valley, and that'll work. And all of that will take you to the website. And then on the website, there are cover images. There are reviews. We just got a book list review, and Publishers Weekly is putting out a review next week, and Library Journal the week after. So I always put the reviews up there. I also sometimes post bad reviews by Amazon readers and good reviews by Amazon readers, because I like to interact with my readers and give both sides credit. And then there are links to Amazon where you can read excerpts of any of the three books that I've published so far. And then on Bandcamp, there's a recording of my story, The Great American Afterlife, with that band.
Now, as far as the technologies we discuss, audiobooks, ebooks, mm-hmm. so this book is also available as a Kindle or Nook, etc.?
Yeah, it is. It's available on Kindle and IndieBound.com and Palette.com, but then it's also in Barnes & Noble and in indie bookstores across the country now.
It was President Roosevelt, who was a big outdoorsman, and mm-hmm. because of him, we have a lot of these great parks. And it was interesting, too, that, there was a big deal about Lincoln last year because of President Lincoln, the movie. Mm-hmm. But very few people know that it was his buddy and his friend who almost got killed, also Seward, who bought Alaska, and what a beautiful place. And for a long time, it was a big joke. It was Seward's icebox.
Yeah, I mean, Abraham Lincoln was really a forward thinker. A lot of people don't know because they think of the national parks later, but in 1864, Abraham Lincoln signed a bill granting Yosemite Valley and the Mariposa Grove to the state of California. And that was the first time the U.S. government had protected land for public enjoyment for future generations. And so even before the first national park, which was Yellowstone, and then Mackinac, and then Yosemite, which was third, much later, Abraham Lincoln was thinking forward and thinking, well, you know, this is something we need. And, yeah, Stewart's icebox. Now I think people are pretty happy that Alaska is part of the United States. And
yes.
That people are able to go up there and fish and hike and climb and raft and all the amazing outdoor things you can do in Alaska.
Well, Peter, thank you very much for joining us. It seems like we have a lot in common.
Yeah, we
here.
Do.
And if you decide to come back to El Paso, whether to Waco Tanks or to the beautiful Oregon Mountains in New Mexico, the Franklin Mountains that we have here, you're welcome to come by and visit the station, and be glad to be your hosts.
Oh, thank you so much. I'd definitely do that.
Well, once again, we've been visiting with Peter Brown Hoffmeister, and the name of his latest novel is called Graphic the Valley, and it is available also on Kindle and audiobooks, and you can find out more about it by going to his website at www.peterbrownhoffmeister.com. And you can find out more about that. Peter, thank you very much for being with us.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer and producer, Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Luis Sainz.